Well, the one place most of us have seen angels is in the movies, where, it has to be said, they don't always get a very warm welcome.
Who are you?
I'm an angel.
You're an angel? Well, I knew it. I've been working too hard.
Well, who are you then?
I told you I'm your guardian angel. I know everything about you.
Well, you look about like the kind of an angel I'd get. Sort of a fallen angel, aren't you? What happened to your wings?
I am a seraphim. The highest choir of angels. You do know what an angel is, don't you?
How do I know you're an angel?
What, you mean aside from the fiery entrance and the expansive wingspan? You want more proof? Fine. How about a tequila?
No matter how poorly prepared we are to encounter them, on screen or off, angels are a fixture in the movies. Start listing the films you've seen in which angels figure prominently. I'll bet you'll be surprised how many you can come up with. Film critic David Edelstein has some thoughts about why we seem to find them so perennially appealing.
I think they come out of a fundamental longing in all humankind. For many people, the modern view of tragedy is summarized by that famous poem of Stephen Crane that goes, and I don't usually memorize poetry, but this one is short enough. A man said to the universe, "Sir, I exist." "However," replied the universe, "that fact has not created in me a sense of obligation." Now, angels are a sign that someone up there is watching and someone up there feels a sense of obligation. I mean, on your most basic level, even if a bad angel comes down, even a fallen angel, it's a sign at least that there is spiritual or metaphysical hierarchy in the universe and that people are paying attention, even in the most glancing way, to the petty affairs of human beings.
We think about this most often, I suspect, around the holidays. I mean, It's a Wonderful Life comes out and Clarence gets his wings. Cary Grant comes down as the bishop asks for help, and Cary Grant comes down.
But, yes, that's rather interesting. Those figures are rather interesting. In the first place, you very rarely have God coming down. I mean, God is the ineffable, and, you know, not even Jesus really talks to God in the New Testament. Most of the time, it's an angel, and the way angels are often portrayed is as petty bureaucrats.
Of course, I'm not one of the more important angels. I just happen to be assigned to this district temporarily. You see, we're everywhere, helping people who deserve to be helped.
It's really amazing to me to think that somebody up in heaven is paying attention to, you know, there's this movie called A Life Less Ordinary, you know, that an angel would come down and be a matchmaker between Cameron Diaz and Ewan McGregor, or an angel would come down in Angels in the Outfield and help a baseball team. You know, it's incredible chutzpah on the part of the human race to think that anybody up there cares enough to intervene.
They always come down as ordinary people. Are there any that don't do that? Are there movies you can think of where angels are, for lack of a better word, more angelic?
Angels have a supernatural cast in Angels in America, which is probably the most consistently worked out of the modern angel tales. The conceit of Angels in America, and for that matter, Kevin Smith's Dogma, which so outraged Catholics and the Catholic Church, the conceit is that God has vanished. In one case, in Angels in America, the AIDS plague is just confirmation that God has taken a break, taken a vacation, gone AWOL. In the other case, the Kevin Smith film, he's somehow, as a result of an accident, in a coma in a hospital in New Jersey. Now, Angels in America has its AIDS-stricken character prior have a series of visions of an angel breaking through the ceiling, coming into his hospital room, and calling him prophet, and telling him that he has to prepare himself for divine revelation.
Greetings, prophet! The great work begins! Prior Walter, long descended, well prepared.
No, I'm not prepared for anything. I have lots to do.
American prophet, tonight you become American eye that pierceth dark. American heart, all hot for truth.
What's interesting is that Tony Kushner's play and also the movie directed by Mike Nichols builds to a sort of tribunal of angels that this character Pryor visits, and in the course of which he decides to renounce revelation. He basically says, I am not going with you. I am not dying. I am not going to ascend to your plane. I am going to go back to the secular world with all its messiness, with all its injustice, with all its death. Hmm. So in the end, the movie ends up kind of embracing the messiness of the world in lieu of accepting divine revelation.
That's not unique, is it? I hadn't thought about it until you began explaining it that way, but there are other movies like that. There was that, what was it, the Nicolas Cage movie a few years, A City of Angels.
Well, let's start with Wings of Desire, directed by Wim Wenders. That's a very beautiful kind of expressionistic German film in which angels descend on modern Berlin and they're privy to the inner thoughts of mortals. Now, what Cities of Angel is a remake, is an Americanization that puts Nicolas Cage squarely on the Hollywood sign. I mean, he literally lands on the Hollywood sign, which is pretty indicative of where the movie goes.
Do you come here a lot?
I live here.
What do you do?
Oh, I'm a messenger.
Oh. Well, what kind of messenger? Like a bike messenger?
No, I'm a messenger of God.
He renounces his angelhood to become mortal, to be with Meg Ryan. And she's so happy that she goes for a bike ride, and she closes her eyes in ecstasy, and she runs straight into an oncoming truck. I think the message of the movie is that life's a bitch. So yeah. Nick Cage is stuck on Earth as a mortal, and Meg Ryan is flattened.
On the other hand, you mentioned Dogma, the Matt Damon, Ben Affleck film. I suppose it's uplifting in some ways because they discuss over and over again the interaction of God and man, but it's hard to see it as uplifting, and there's an awful lot of
blood and guts. Dogma, remember, is about primarily fallen angels, not real angels. They're actually played by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, and they have spent 2,000 years stuck in Wisconsin. I think it's Wisconsin.
Yes, it
is. And they're desperate to get out of it, and they're kind of psychotic.
You all right, man? Your eyes are kind of...
My eyes are open. For the first time, I get it. See, in the beginning, it was just us and him, angels and God. Then he created humans. Ours was designed to be a life of servitude and worship and bowing and scraping and adoration. He gave them more than he ever gave us. He gave them a choice. They choose to acknowledge God or choose to ignore him.
You know, all I'm saying here is that one of us might need a little nap.
You asked also about angels not taking human form. Well, these are very recognizable stars, but at the same time they have, it's so interesting, they've got, the wings are really cool. The wings are sort of made out of genuine flesh when they come out. They're sort of flesh, blood, and cartilage. And when they're clipped, you know, these angels sort of howl in pain. So it adds this whole sort of physical, visceral thrust to them. But they're fallen angels. The whole conceit of the movie is that God's will and Catholic dogma has sort of come into conflict. The Catholics have sort of taken God's will in their own direction, and they've codified it, and they've codified it badly. And since God is now in a coma, these two angels see a loophole that they can take advantage of. And if they succeed in their mission, God will be shown to be fallible, and the center will not hold, and the apocalypse will destroy all life in the universe. So there is, you could say, quite a bit at stake.
I'm to charge you with a holy crusade.
For the record, I work in an abortion clinic.
Noah was a drunk. Look what he accomplished. And no one's asking you to build an ark. All you got to do is go to New Jersey.
I was about to say that this is an example of the way in which Hollywood has helped us to move toward a much more cynical view of the universe. But back to It's a Wonderful Life, the Jimmy Stewart, Frank Capra movie, that actually may not have come from a great belief in the goodness of people. We forget that it came right after World War II, when the world was looking very different from what it had before. And this was a way to look at people's nature. We think of it as a frolic. but there were some serious things being said.
So you still think killing yourself would make everyone feel happier, eh?
Well, I don't know. I guess you're right. I suppose it'd been better if I'd never been born at all.
You've got your wish. You've never been born.
The impressive thing about Frank Capra, I find his sentimentality a little much in places, but at his best, he actually made a series of extremely bleak films, films that reflected some of the social realities, that reflected a certain amount of modern cynicism. You know, It's a Wonderful Life is so moving, not because it's a frolic, not because it's saccharine, but because it allows you to see the protagonist at very, very low ebb, on the brink of suicide. And then it says, you know, all these things have happened to you, but think of what the world would have been like without you. It is a little bit of a narcissistic fantasy, but at the same time, it's a very resonant question. Who are we to say, are we so egotistical that we believe we're allowed to remove ourselves from the world? Look at how many people depend on us, how many people we love. Look at how many lives we've touched. So that is a very inspiring message.
Daddy! Zozo! Zozo, my little ginger snap, how do you feel?
Fine! Not a smidge of temper.
Not a smidge of temper. Hallelujah!
Hello?
David Edelstein is the film critic for Slate.com, and his reviews can also be heard on NPR's Fresh Air.